Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising. This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Valerie Sanderson, and in the early hours of Monday, the 28th of October, these are our main stories. President Trump confirms that the leader of the Islamic State group, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, has blown himself up after being cornered by US special forces in Syria.
Given what he did in creating this caliphate and the damage that he's done, his removal will be welcomed. But before we celebrate too much, we should recognise that he was actually a very low-profile leader.
There are big gains for the far left and far right in regional elections in Germany. Also in this podcast, tens of thousands turn out for a Spanish unity march in Barcelona. And a painting which hung in a kitchen in northern France for years sells for $26 million. He was described as the most wanted man in the world with a $25 million price tag on his head. But now the United States has announced that Islamic State leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi has been killed in a covert military operation. The raid took place on Saturday night in a remote Syrian village near Idlib. Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi had been on the run for years, and his death has been falsely reported several times since he declared a caliphate in Iraq and Syria. The first public mention of the operation came when President Trump tweeted that something very big has just happened, and then several hours later made this address from the White House.
Last night, the United States brought the world's number one terrorist leader to justice. Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi is dead. He was the founder and leader of ISIS, the most ruthless and violent terror organization anywhere in the world. The United States has been searching for Baghdadi for many years. Capturing or killing Baghdadi has been the top national security priority of my administration.
The president described how al-Baghdadi was cornered together with three of his children.
He reached the end of the tunnel as our dogs chased him down. He ignited his vest, killing himself and the three children. His body was mutilated by the blast. The tunnel had caved in on it in addition. But test results gave certain, immediate, and totally positive identification. It was him.
But the Russian Defense Ministry remains unconvinced that Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi is dead. Steve Rosenberg reports from Moscow.
According to a spokesman for the Russian Defense Ministry, in recent days, Moscow had registered no airstrikes by US or coalition forces in what it referred to as the Idlib de-escalation zone. Despite Donald Trump publicly praising Russia for opening up airspace it controls, Moscow says it is not aware of any assistance being given to the American Air Force to enter airspace around Idlib.
Steve Rosenberg in Moscow. The militants of Islamic State have been on the back foot in recent months. Most of the territory in Syria and Iraq that they once controlled has been lost, with many IS fighters captured and held in prisons or camps. But does the death of its leader mean the end for the organisation? I asked our security correspondent, Frank Gardner.
No, it's not, unfortunately, because the ideology which he espoused, it lives on in the twisted minds of a lot of people. It imposed mass misery on nearly 8 million people, extorting billions of dollars, robbing, raping, beheading, crucifying, amputating, and burning and drowning people alive. It is an absolutely sick organization, which ended in March this year in Baghouz in Syria when it lost the last bit of its caliphate. But you've only got to look at the mood inside the prison camps, the Kurdish-run prison detention centres like Al-Hol, that are seething with the remnants of ISIS. There's a part of Al-Hol called Jabal Baghouz, Mountain of Baghouz, which is ISIS-controlled. The black flag of ISIS flies there. They impose their rule. The women in the larger part of the camp are imposing draconian punishments. They are fanatical followers of ISIS. So it isn't over. There are sleeper cells, and unfortunately, ultimately, in the Middle East, it comes down to this. Wherever there is bad governance or a lack of governance, that's where organizations like Al-Qaeda and ISIS will flourish. They jump into the vacuum, they exploit it. And Iraq is badly governed. Look at the protests that have been going on. Syria is not even governed in total. It's still governed in bits and occupied by Russians, by Turks, by Americans. There are people all over that country. Its civil war isn't over. So the conditions which led to ISIS flourishing in the first place are not completely resolved. They are better than they were in 2014, but they're not resolved.
Did he have a designated successor? I mean, is there someone around whom the remnants of his organisation will coalesce?
There will be a Shura Council that will have either decided that in secret or will announce it shortly. It'll be somebody you and I have never heard of, and it'll be a kunya, what's known as a kunya, which is a nom de guerre. It'll be Abu something. So his real name was Ibrahim Awad al-Badri, but he chose the nom de guerre of Abu Bakr, who was one of the first divinely guided caliphs, one of the first four caliphs to succeed the Prophet Muhammad, al-Baghdadi, because he had spent much of his life in Baghdad preaching and studying there. So these are the kind of names that, so it'll be Abu something, the something, who will replace him almost certainly.
Frank Gardner. America's regional allies have welcomed news of the death, although Syrian Kurds have warned of reprisal attacks by Islamic State sleeper cells. Iran dismissed the news as no big deal, saying the US had merely killed its own creature. The UK said it was an important moment, but warned that the fight against IS is far from over. Tobias Elwood is a member of the UK Parliament from the governing Conservative Party. He was, until July, Britain's defence minister, and he was asked for his reaction to reports of al-Baghdadi's death.
I think given what he did in creating this caliphate and the damage that he's done to the Middle East and wider beyond, his removal will be welcomed. But before we celebrate too much, we should recognise that he was actually a very low-profile leader here. He did not have the cult personality or wasn't the inspirational leader like Osama bin Laden. IS operates on a cell structure, therefore I don't see any change in the future.
What do you think then the reaction will be from ISIS?
Well, on the one side, I think the president is going to milk this, when actually it only comes a week after he triggered a series of dramatic and catastrophic events with the pullout of American troops in northern Syria, which in the fog of the confusion with Turkey invading its neighbor and Kurdish allies being pushed into the arms of the Syrian dictator, we've seen Daesh fighters able to escape from their encampments and to regroup. As I say, they operate in a very different program than we've seen other terrorist operators. The attacks in London, in Paris, and elsewhere actually prove that. The sleeper cell format means that there will be repercussions because of this.
But getting rid of someone who's posed this existential threat, surely that is in itself is a good thing? Or are you suggesting actually in the short term it might be a bad thing because of reprisals?
I'm merely being realistic. And my concern is that the Americans will interpret this because of Donald Trump and the way that he's going to announce this, that somehow his job is done and he can move forward. And he's satisfied that, you know, the Daesh has now been defeated because the leader has gone. Quite the contrary. Simply the way Daesh operates in its funding, it's starting to regroup, as we said. We've seen IS flags pop up again in Iraq as well. The job is far from done. There has not been a post-conflict strategy after the international community did come together to defeat Daesh and the caliphate militarily. We are seeing, I'm afraid, extremism continue to grow and regroup in other parts of the Middle East. And as I say, this is going to be very, very dangerous because there will be a desire to lash back, you know, to prove the fact that Daesh, Islamic State, is very much alive.
And it's Europe rather than the United States that's more likely to feel that backlash.
It is. I mean, this is the whole purpose. I mean, this is, you must understand how these groups function. They deliberately design themselves so that it isn't a simple leader that can be taken out. But actually, there are copycat operators. There are those who receive instructions or can be indoctrinated or encouraged to then cause harm and strike terrorism in other parts of the world. And that's what we'll continue to see. The setup is very, very different from Al-Qaeda.
Is your fear then that President Trump can use this to say job done, and for the vast majority of the American public, they will see this perhaps as they saw the Bin Laden killing and will say, yep, job done, that decision was right to pull out of northeastern Syria?
He will absolutely do this. He's already tried to spin this in somehow that the Turkish invasion in creating a new safe zone, which actually has turned out to be a war zone with the actual movement of his own refugees that are in Turkey back into northern Syria, reshaping the actual demographics there, and really unleashing a whole series of untold pain in northern Syria without international leadership. So he will spin this as a win. He will spin this as an opportunity to say job done, when actually the reverse is the case. The Western partners, the international community, NATO itself must recognize what is actually happening here and step into what I hope will only be a temporary step back by the United States because of this president itself, who actually, against advice of the Pentagon and of the State Department, has made decisions purely on political grounds alone. We are entering a very dangerous new chapter of the Middle East.
Former UK Defence Minister Tobias Elwood talking there to the BBC's James Kumarasamy. Well, President Trump chose to provide a great deal of detail about Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi's capture and his final moments. James Kumarasamy asked the former US intelligence officer Michael Pregent if he thought that level of detail was wise.
I don't have a problem with that. Even when President Obama was very careful about how he described the raid and went out of his way to say that the funeral for Osama bin Laden was done with, you know, Islamic traditions, we still had attacks. We still had attacks against Americans in Iraq and Afghanistan. The president going out of his way to say that Baghdadi died in such a cowardly fashion, I think is okay also. There's going to be revenge attacks regardless, but it's important not to make Baghdadi sound like a hero, and it's important to say that he brought these three children in and then detonated. That's significant.
But what about the details of, you know, where the American can set off from, how far away it was, those kind of details, operational details? Isn't that potentially compromising U.S. intelligence?
Well, yes. Okay, so operational security is very important. But the president said that they flew in from Erbil to do the attack. The Obama administration continuously said that these attacks came from, or the special operators were based in Erbil and conducted attacks in Syria. That is known. What's more telling is that we weren't able to do the attack from Incirlik Air Base, which is only 100 kilometers away from the strike site, that we had to do it from Iraq.
What does that tell you?
Well, it tells us that if we would have conducted the operation out of Incirlik, first off, we weren't given permission to do it, and we also don't trust to be able to do it from there based on the relationship we currently have with our NATO ally.
And that is significant, isn't it, in the bigger picture?
Yeah, it's concerning. I think it would have been compromised. Turkey facilitated ISIS networks into Syria. The president thanked Russia and Turkey and Iraq and Syria. He thanked Russia and Turkey for not shooting down U.S. aircraft. He thanked the Iraqi Kurds, the Iraqi intelligence services, and the Syrian Kurds for providing intelligence that corroborated what the U.S. intel community already had.
Former U.S. intelligence officer Michael Pregent. Coming up, we hear from a former IS hostage who gave his reaction to Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi's death.
I would not say that I was happy, but I was satisfied for sure to know that, this person will not be able to harm anyone anymore.
The German state of Thuringia has fewer inhabitants than Berlin, but the election there on Sunday has significance way beyond its borders. The far left and the far right have increased their share of the vote. The far-right AfD gained nearly a quarter of the votes cast, and for the first time since reunification 28 years ago, the Linke, East Germany's former communist ruling party under a new name, has become the strongest force in one of the German states. I spoke to our correspondent in Berlin, Damien McGuinness.
What we found is that there's such a splintering of the votes that we have more parties in parliament potentially, which is going to make it difficult to form a government. Now, we haven't got the final results yet, so it's not entirely clear what coalition possibilities would add up to majority. What we can say is, as you mentioned, the radical left Linker Party has got the most votes, will now try to form a coalition. The problem is, though, that the most obvious majority would be then with Angela Merkel's Conservative Party. They refuse to work with the Linker because it's accused of or seen often as being a successor to East Germany's Communist Party. For many conservatives, that's a no-go. Numerically, the other option would be with the far-right AfD. There, the left refuses to form a coalition with the far-right, which is accused of being right-wing extremists. So what we're seeing is it's going to be very difficult to form any sort of coalition at all.
And why do you think Angela Merkel's CDU and the Social Democrats lost so much?
Yeah, I mean, this is really a wider trend we're seeing across Germany. Voters are going for smaller parties with a clearer profile. The country is becoming more polarised politically. So what we're seeing is that voters are opting for increasingly for parties at the more radical end of the left or the right. Traditional allegiances to these big tent parties are breaking down. Also, though, you have to remember that these two big tent parties, the Conservatives and the centre-left, have governed Germany nationally now for 10 of the past 15 years. Now, this cooperation has meant that both parties have, to a certain extent, lost their identities. They both moved to the centre. So a lot of their grassroots voters are opting for smaller parties with a clearer left or right-wing agenda. And also, both parties have been going through a lot of flux recently. They're trying to decide on new leaders. As a result, there's a bit of uncertainty about the direction both parties are going in. And they've been losing support really across the country. And we're seeing that a little bit also in this particular election now.
Damian McGuinness. Police in Barcelona say 80,000 people joined a march through the city on Sunday in support of Spanish unity. Many carried banners bearing the slogan Enough, reflecting their frustration at repeated protests by Catalan separatists. Our correspondent Sarah Rainsford reports from the march.
There are tens of thousands of people crammed into the street here in central Barcelona, and they've come here carrying two flags side by side, the Spanish national flag and the Catalan flag too. And that's to symbolise their main message here, which is of unity, of people living side by side, and of course the fact that they believe that Catalonia is and should always be a part of the united Spain. They've come here chanting Viva España, long live Catalonia. But there has been strong language here too, people agreeing with the longer prison sentences for the independence leaders. And one man who told me that this issue is so divisive in Spain that a lot of his old friends are no longer speaking to him. He says they've even deleted him from social media. So this is a country that's now very much divided over this issue of Catalan independence. This crowd, though, absolutely adamant that Catalonia is and must remain part of Spain. Now, this is the biggest gathering that these pro-unity protesters have managed to bring out in the 2 years since the vote for independence that was declared illegal by Spain. They wanted this crowd, the size of the crowd here, to send a message. And there are other voices in Spain, voices that do believe that Spain must remain united.
Sarah Rainsford in Barcelona. A major rescue operation has been taking place in the Indian state of Tamil Nadu, where a two-year-old boy has been trapped down a narrow well 180 metres deep since Friday. Prayers are being held in temples, mosques and churches across the state for his safe return. Eletra Naismith has more.
The toddler was playing near his home in Tiruchirappalli when he fell into the abandoned well. He was initially stuck about 10 metres down, but has since fallen much further. Specialist teams from the National Disaster Response Force have joined the rescue effort. India's main energy company has sent a rig to try to dig the toddler out. Oxygen is being pumped in, but the authorities say layers of wet mud are preventing them from assessing the child's condition. There have been calls for hefty fines for those who leave abandoned wells open and for parents to watch their children.
Eletra Naismith. Romania has a huge problem with its plastic waste. A new law came into force this year which was supposed to streamline the country's inefficient waste recycling systems. But the new law has made matters worse. From Bucharest, Nick Thorpe sent us this report.
I'm standing in the yard of a vast recycling plant in Buzău, a city an hour's drive northwest of Bucharest. Wherever I look, there are great bales of brightly coloured, flattened plastic PET bottles, the sort that once held your soft drinks. The director of the factory is Konstantin Damov.
We have here bales of PET. Actually, it's our raw material. It's arriving to us both from local market, I would say also from countries around Romania, Bulgaria, Serbia, Poland, Moldavia, so on. And also material that we are bringing from UK, France, Germany, Italy. Sometimes we have been bringing this from Mexico or even from Japan recently.
Konstantin's facility was set up to process 100% Romanian plastic, the quantities Romania, as an EU member, promised it would collect by 2020. Instead, it now imports 50%, because the authorities cannot collect enough plastic to supply it from Romania. Most Romanian waste ends up in legal or illegal landfill sites. Octavian Berceanu, a Bucharest city councillor for the opposition Save Romania Union and a campaigner for better waste management, took me to an illegal waste dump in the city.
We are here in Bucharest, in District 5, 3 kilometers away from the downtown. It's a private space, but a public road, very close. And during this year, they put a lot of garbage here.
The district council brought garbage and dumped
it
here.
Exactly. Most of this trash is coming from construction. And I put pressure on the governmental institution to clean this mess from here because it's smelling very bad. It's destroying the quality of air and our life too.
Even as we stand there, trucks arrive to begin taking the waste away. And the boss steps out of a smart BMW to oversee the operation. Radu Berica, director of the waste management company, RER.
A couple of days ago, we were asked by the municipality of Sector 5 to remove an illegal dump from their territory.
Why did Sector 5 bring all this stuff here in the first place?
We do not have enough capacities in processing, and processing costs money. Every processing step is more expensive than dumping illegally on the street corner. So there are people which want to save the money, so they dump it on the street. Because they have no fines, no penalties, nothing, they can afford to do this.
Recycling industry experts blame the authorities, first and foremost, for poor procedures. Until this year, private companies collected selected waste from the public and sold it to the recycling plants. But a new law drove them out of business. Now local councils have a monopoly on selecting waste. But very often they don't have either the know-how or the infrastructure to do so. So everything gets mixed up and contaminated. That's Dan Tudorache, the mayor of Bucharest District 1. I met him in his office to ask for his response to suggestions that the governing socialists, his party, have made things worse. He defends the new system.
There were many middlemen in the old system, but now we in the local council have full responsibility for it. There are still many problems, but we have set up an environment directorate to solve them. We will sort out the waste problem in the end.
Back in Buzău, at the recycling plant, state-of-the-art machinery washes the dirt and organic waste from the PET bottles. Konstantin Damov says Romania is approaching a watershed.
It will be a big drama in Romania very soon, since all landfills are filled with a high speed and the new landfills will be very difficult to be built. Who will be the neighbour that will accept a new landfill?
So it's a time bomb, a waste bomb waiting to explode under Romania.
I'm afraid so.
Nick Thorpe in Bucharest. A 13th century painting discovered hanging above the cooker in a French kitchen has been sold for around $26 million at an auction near Paris. The rare masterpiece by the Italian Renaissance artist Cimabue went for more than four times its estimated value. Our Europe regional editor Mike Sanders reports.
The modestly sized religious scene on a wood panel was just an old icon in the eyes of its owner, a French woman in her 90s. She had it in her kitchen, soaking up the heat from her cooking. When she decided to downsize this year, it could easily have ended up on the rubbish dump. but an auctioneer recognised its quality and sent it for expert appraisal. It turned out to be a painting of Christ mocked by the pre-Renaissance Florentine artist Cimabue. It's one of only around 10 of his works that survive.
Mike Sanders. Let's get more now on Sunday's announcement by President Trump of the death of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. Back in July 2014, it was al-Baghdadi who announced the creation of the Islamic State Caliphate at the Great Mosque of al-Nuri in Mosul.
God has granted your brothers, the Mujahideen, victory and a conquest after years of patience and holy struggle and enabled them to achieve their objective. And they have rushed to declare an Islamic caliphate and to appoint an imam, which is a duty for Muslims, a duty that has been lost for centuries, that had been absent from reality, making many Muslims ignorant of it.
Over the years, al-Baghdadi has attracted fighters from all around the world who captured dozens of foreigners, including the French journalist Nicolas Henin, who was held hostage for 9 months.
Well, my reaction was satisfaction. I would not say that I was happy because I'm not the kind of person who is happy about anyone's death, but I was satisfied for sure to know that, this person who has done so much harm to so many people, who killed dozens of thousands of Syrians, Iraqis, and people from other nationalities all around the world, this person is, will not be able to harm anyone anymore.
And while you were being held, what sort of a presence was he? Did you hear much talk about him?
Well, at some point, at the early stage of our captivity, we received a visit from some senior officials of the group. I don't know if al-Baghdadi himself was part of these visitors, but later and at several occasions, our jailers, who were mostly Europeans, told us about al-Baghdadi, and they described him as, the leader of the Mujahideen, the leader of, their leader, that a person that they respected very much.
Donald Trump says that IS is finished now. What do you think?
Well, that's a huge mistake to believe this. This is the biggest mistake you can do to allow it to revive. It's far from finished. I mean, all the conditions, especially in the Middle East, especially in Syria, and to some extent in Iraq, are still there. So if we stop our efforts to counter it, then we will face and it will backlash, and all the gains that we all our victories of the last years will be their effects will vanish. We will lose all their benefits.
Others might suffer the same fate as you. Have the same experience.
Yeah, I guess.
The French journalist Nicolas Henin. And that's it from us for now, but there'll be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. If you want to comment on this edition or the topics covered in it, you can send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. I'm Valerie Sanderson. Until next time, bye-bye.